You're listening to Catholic Forum. I'm Bob Krebs. Kerry Walters is a professor of philosophy and peace and justice studies at Gettysburg College. He is a prolific author whose recent books include Giving Up God to Find God, Breaking Free of Idolatry, and The Art of Dying and Living. His two newest books, published by Franciscan Media, are titled John the 23rd, A Short Biography, and John Paul II, A Short Biography. And I'm very happy to welcome to Catholic Forum Professor Kerry Walters. Good morning, Kerry. Thanks for coming.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
On April the 27th, Pope Francis will canonize Blessed Pope John the 23rd and Blessed Pope John Paul II. What is the significance of these two popes in the history of the world and the history of the Church?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the significance of both of these men is really immeasurable. Both of them brought the Church into a brand new era. John Paul II always wanted to live to see the new millennium, which of course he did, because he thought it was his duty as the Vicar of Rome to inaugurate the Church into a brand new millennium. But I think that John 23 really started that flow toward the new millennium. Mm-hmm. So far as the world goes, John Paul II was instrumental in many people's estimation of helping to bring about the fall of communism. And John 23, I think, really awakened the world to the importance of peace in a nuclear age.
Mm. How were these men different, and how were they similar? I'm talking about primarily their personalities.
Yeah. Personality-wise, I think they were pretty different, although policy-wise, as popes, I'm not sure that they are as different as a lot of people want to say that they are. Mm-hmm. Temperamentally, they seem to have been different. John 23 tended to have a kind of cosmopolitan openness to him, and I suspect that part of that was because of his outgoing personality, but part of it, I suspect, also was because he had been in the Vatican diplomatic service for so many years and had gotten used to rubbing elbows, so to speak, with people from different cultures and different religions. John Paul II, by temperament and by raising, I think, was more reserved. He grew up in Poland in a time in which the Catholic Church tended to have a kind of dark and brooding flavor to it. I don't mean that pejoratively at all. It was just part of the culture at the time. Mm-hmm. He suffered great hardship and great loss when he was a young man. By the time he was 20, he had lost his entire immediate family. And I think that drove him inward in a kind of dark and brooding way at times. Mm-hmm. It certainly made him less receptive, I think, to alternative perspectives than John 23 was.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with Patricia Treese a few weeks ago, and she mentioned that the family of John the 23rd kept growing throughout his life. You know, he had a large family, and there were a lot of marriages and babies and so forth. Where the family of John Paul II throughout his life got smaller and smaller with deaths and so forth. So that probably reflected on their personalities as well.
I think that's absolutely true. And there were charming photographs of John 23 with his surviving brothers and sisters. All of them came from peasant stock in the Lombardy region of Italy. Mm-hmm. And in these photographs, you've got John 23 decked out in all of his papal regalia, surrounded by older men and women, his brothers and sisters, who are dressed as you would expect farmers from rural Italy to dress. And yet all of them, including the Pope, are beaming.
Yeah. Now, I guess John the 23rd died in the early 1960s, correct?
And, right, 63, yeah, July of 63. Yeah.
So I guess most of us, unless you're of a certain age, really remember John Paul II much more than John the 23rd. But I hear that John the 23rd has had quite an interesting sense of humor. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, he did. He brought a wit to, at least a public wit, to the Vatican that hadn't been seen for a while. He was asked once, for instance, how many people worked in the Vatican, and without dropping a breath, he replied, about half. He was always dropping innocent jokes like that.
Mm-hmm. And how about John Paul II? I mean, We know him as an actor, and having that little bit of a flair for the dramatic. How did that influence his personality in his pontificate?
I think that he did have a flair for the dramatic, and he knew how to speak to large audiences with pageantry that appealed to the senses, to the visual senses. You're absolutely right. When he was a younger man in Krakow, he was heavily involved in theatrics. Although, curiously enough, the type of drama that he was involved in was always worded but not propped in any way. It's interesting that he became so adept with props as first a bishop and then a pope. But if you look at some of the huge mass gatherings that were common during his pontificate, particularly in Poland, you can't help but notice, you know, flowing banners and wonderful canopies and elaborate processions, all of which I think appeal to his own flair for the dramatic, but also clearly touch the hearts and minds of millions of people.
What would you say is their legacy to us today, both men?
I think that there's a ecclesial legacy and a spiritual legacy for both men. For John 23, I think that the legacy, the spiritual legacy that he left us was how to be a saint. I mean, he says in his wonderful diaries, which are translated in English, and I would really encourage your listeners to read them if they get a chance. He said that as a young man, he thought that in order to be a good Christian, what he had to do was to pick out one or two saints whom he particularly admired and copy their behavior. But it didn't take him too long to realize that that just wasn't going to do it, that what we should try to do if we want to be good Christians, if we want to be saintly, is to emulate the essentials of the saints, but not their incidentals, not their accidentals. We have to emulate their humility, their deep compassion, their love of humankind and of God, and adapt them to our own incidentals, to the accidentals of our own life. I think that's his legacy. As far as John Paul II goes, his spiritual legacy is, in my estimation, his effort to help us understand the nature and role of suffering in the Christian life. Mm-hmm. He, as we've already touched on, knew suffering firsthand, up close and personal, the loss of his family, the years under first the Nazis and then the communists in Poland, and of course his own near brush with death in 1981 during the assassination attempt. A few years after that, he wrote an apostolic letter, not an encyclical, but a letter called Salvavici Dolores, Redemptive Suffering, in which he argues that if we take seriously the notion of the body of Christ, the mystical body of Christ, then what that means is that all of us, of course, are not only connected to one another, but also connected to Christ, that our sufferings and our joys are participated in by Christ, just as Christ's joys and sorrows are participated in by us. And if that's the case, then our suffering, like Christ's suffering, because our suffering is merged with his, must have some kind of redemptive value. Suffering isn't meaningless. Suffering isn't gratuitous. You know, my grandfather, and probably yours, used to say, offer it up every time that you had a toothache. Right. Well, in a curious kind of way, John Paul II is saying just that, but he's providing us with a theological explanation for why it's good to offer it up. So suffering on John Paul's part and becoming a saint on John's part, I think, are their spiritual legacies to us.
As you researched these two men for your books, what were some of the more surprising things that you found out about them?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. With John, I was surprised to discover just how humble a man he really was.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man who described himself as not being a terribly good scholar, not being as devout as he would wish, and always ready to take second and third and fourth place. And as a consequence, because he was too humble to thump his own drum, as it were, in the curia, he really was, for most of his life, relegated to the back bench,
mm-hmm.
And was content with that. And it astounded me that a man this humble could, once he became pope, do the world-changing thing that he did in calling the conclave and calling Vatican II.
Mm-hmm.
John Paul too surprised me as I got to know more and more about him by the fact that there were, as I suppose is the case with many popes, two persona. There was the public persona and there was the private persona. Privately, he was incredibly loyal to his friends, and he broke the long-standing custom of popes, for instance, dining by themselves and remaining relatively secluded, even in the Vatican. He refused to dine by himself, and that he reminds me a little bit of the current pope, Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. He appears to have been quite convivial with friends and acquaintances in private. Even though he was warm publicly, there was always that papal reserve that he displayed.
Our books on Benedict and Francis in the works, Carrie?
You know what? Franciscan Media, who published these two books, and I have talked briefly about the possibility of a short biography of Peter Faber, who was just canonized by Francis.
Oh, okay.
The series in which these two books appear are really more geared towards saints than popes.
Uh-huh.
It just so happened that two popes are being canonized.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, on April 27th, Pope John the 23rd and Pope Paul John Paul II will be canonized. And what is the significance of this upcoming canonization? Should Catholics and non-Catholics pay attention to it? Does it mean anything?
I think it means a lot, as a matter of fact. I mean, let's face it, all of us should strive to be saints. I think it was Thomas Merton, among a lot of others, I suspect, who once said that the goal of every Christian should be to become a saint. So we know that there are thousands and tens of thousands of saints who haven't been officially canonized.
Mm-hmm.
But to officially canonize one of those millions of saints is to declare before the world that this person is worth taking a second and a third and a fourth look at,
mm-hmm.
not as a celebrity or not even as a hero, but as someone who humbled him or herself enough to conform his or her will to the will of God. I think all of us ought to pay attention to that.
Yeah. Carrie Walter's books are titled John the 23rd, A Short Biography, and John Paul II, A Short Biography. They are published by Franciscan Media, available at catalog.franciscanmedia.org or at your local Catholic bookstore. Professor Carrie Walters, thanks so much for being with us today on Catholic Forum.
Thank you, Bob. It was my pleasure indeed.